Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I have with me today Dot Wood from M6 TIE Theatre Company, although they're going away from calling themselves a TIE company for reasons that I think we'll go into shortly. Probably at least one of the oldest TIE companies in the world, if not the oldest surviving TIE company in the world, where she's been for 30 years and has recently announced that she's going to be leaving later this year. So I thought this was a good chance to reflect on the last 30 years of TIE and of M6's contribution to it. So welcome to Theatre Voice.
Hello.
And first of all, I'd like to ask you, why have you decided now that it's time to leave?
Well, I'll be 2 months off being, when I do go, so 2 months off being here 30 years. That's quite a long time. I just need a lot more time for a range of things, including family and my lovely grandchildren. But I am fortunate to be coming back to M6 on a couple of creative projects, and that'll be great. So I won't be writing any more funding applications or justifying everything we're doing. I'll just be able to do it.
Just the fun parts, then.
Just the fun part.
And it's the old politicians spending more time with the family, is it?
Well, yeah. Lots of things. Some new adventures ahead, I hope.
Ah, right. But you've been there for 30 years. You started originally in more of an administration role, didn't you?
Well, I came in a sort of new role, which was education liaison. I'd been a teacher for 10 years in a multiracial school in Rochdale and been very involved in M6, being on an education panel that they had at that in their early years. And, you know, being wowed by the impact of M6's work on the children I used to teach. So we became a bit of a guinea pig school, really, because they were sort of friends with me and trusted me. And so a lot of work was trialled and developed in my school. And so it was lovely to have come here and do this full time. I'd only been here about 2 years, and there were all sorts of funding crises, so I did wonder what I'd done. But no, I've never regretted it. And although there's been a lot of challenges, big mountains to climb, and some tears and sadness as well at various times, but mostly it's been the most wonderful job I could have ever had, and it will be hard to leave, but I'll never lose touch with the company.
I want to have a look at what the state of TIE is and was over the last 30 years then. When you came into it in 1982, what was theatre in education at that time?
Well, that's big question, and I'm sure people like Tony Jackson has written about it much better than I can talk about it. But the company I came into, and that's what I know of, really, you know, and I did know a lot of members of the company, like Sue Johnson, people like that, who were some of the first actors here at M6, and M6 had grown out of Bolton Octagon TIE. Bolton Octagon had lost its local authority. The TIE department had lost its local authority funding, but the Arts Council said, we'll stay in with our funding if you can find another North West local authority to pick up the tab. And fortunately for M6, Rochdale did. So the company, as with many established early wave TIE companies, comprised of permanent actors. So at M6 there were 5 permanent actors. There was a resident director, resident designer, and some resident stage manager and some admin staff. And I came and joined that team because the company were aware that maybe they needed a more consistent two-way bridge between schools and what schools were wanting, and that informed content. And also I was raising awareness of M6's work in schools, so it was a two-way, very, very useful sort of role. And at the time, I think that a lot of the work was very text-driven. I would say that there was an emphasis on seeing the personal through the political. The starting point was usually the political, looking at inequalities, historical or social or political, in the world. So the starting point usually started from, you know, uncovering a bit of unreported history or take on important things that were happening in the world. And then finding a way through those. But the starting point, as I say, was often the written word, really.
So you did start with a script, because it was in the 1970s in particular, TIE was largely group devised, wasn't it, by a company, and it was starting to move towards a script base. So did you have script writers?
Well, there was a lot of work devised, but it would always have the writer at the centre. I think writers at the time were put on a bit of a pedestal, really, you know. There would either be a resident writer in a company, which M6 did have at certain times, or a writer in with the devising, or somebody sort of pulling together all the different ideas that were coming out of devising. Unlike our R&D now, where we would also be linking our artists with children and with teachers, I think it was very, you know, closed to the artistic group at that time. But some brilliant work came out of that, and some real classic pieces came out of that. And I think a lot of TIE companies at the time, we were creating original work and we were sharing that original work. So, you know, classics like Dave Holman's Peacemaker, or Leeds TIE Flags and Bandages, pieces of work like that, John Wood's Big Mountain. You know, the majority of established TIE companies all did those strong pieces of work, and they were very powerful. They were usually performed to a single class size and had a very interactive workshop, often with children in role, really absorbing them in the particular context that was being explored and problems that were being explored, and really getting children to sort of put on other people's shoes, you know. But the majority of companies like M6 were also offering a free service to schools. Yes. So it was very easy to say this piece of work will work well with 30 children, and we need the hall for a day. And, you know, there was the early days, pre-national curriculum, and a free service. So, you know, we could be in a school a day or 2 days, or in a way, they were the ideal conditions to really produce fantastic and impactful theatre with strong learning within it.
You mentioned the political, and that was where some TIE companies were a bit controversial and clashed with local authority funders and governments. Were there any clashes like that?
I think there were one or two, probably. there was certainly a big one just before I came, but it was more not in the TIE work. When I arrived here, there was also the company was a community and TIE. So there was a lot of adult community work, and that again was mostly new writing, and some of that was highly political. It happened in upstairs rooms, in pubs, and, you know, also working men's clubs, all sorts of places, you know, non-theatre spaces.
Yeah.
So some of that was pretty hard-hitting, but, you know, very important work, more so than the TIE, I think, really, because TIE was usually quite child focused, even though there was probably a slightly different, you know, starting points, but I can't remember controversy around the TIE work.
Well, it was mainly going out to schools and working with children in classrooms, was it?
Classrooms and school halls, depending on the size of the set. I mean, as I say, I used to bring a lot of work into my school, and one of the most fantastic pieces of work that came in was a play called, I think it was in 1981, a play called The Pen Hal. And where the whole hall was transformed with an absolutely huge fishing boat, which all the children had life jackets put on in the workshop. And Sue Johnson was playing this fantastic character who'd went back in time, and she'd had to pretend she was a man to be able to be captain of a ship in whatever age. But then it went to modern day fishing, and it was an amazing piece where the children were so incredibly involved. So things were quite large scale, not just in the classroom sometimes as well. You know, I think the design was quite important as well.
And it all sounds very expensive as well.
I think it was quite expensive, yes. I mean, we had a permanent cast of five in everything, and just occasionally the piece would only require a four-hander, so the other actor would be able to research a new play for the next 3 months or something. So yes, it was we didn't have to worry about money as much in those days. We weren't making money, we were ploughing it all back into the work and the provision, but nevertheless we were a very different climate, a very different world than now.
Yeah, and things started to change really with when the Education Act came in and the national curriculum came in, and the time that was available in schools and the money that was available for schools, that all changed. And some TIE companies like Coventry, Belgrade, that started the whole TIE wave off, went to the wall, they disappeared. But M6 survived. How do you think they survived? Did they have to change significantly to do so?
I think it was massive, the change. The early 90s, we were a group of 11. We were well funded by Rochdale Council. We lost 92% of that funding. We knew, therefore, we would have to shrink as a core company. We would have to start charging for our work. And we actually changed from a company of 11 down to a company of 2. Lots of conversations with the board, and the feeling was that we would focus on what was the heart of the company, which was the TIE work, the community theatre and the very large sale Christmas shows that we'd started doing, which were brilliant, but they would just have to go. We just couldn't, with a core team of 2, provide that much work. So I remember there was me and Les Hampson, our administrator, and all these empty desks with phones and people's work on them and all the people gone. It was sad and challenging, but I remember saying to Les, right, 2 things. Let's paint the office walls bright yellow and cheer ourselves up. It's been such a grim time. And let's keep the quality of the work, even if we can't do as much work.
Yeah.
But let's not lose the vision, the values, the quality. And if all that goes as well, well, let's pack up and go home. Yeah. So for the next couple of years, Les and I think we did about 14-hour days, and we were like a pair of hostages, really. We just fought and talked and fundraised and worked our socks off to keep it going, and to try and influence as many people as we could, you know, about the worth of it. And the Arts Council did keep their funding in through that difficult period, and slowly and surely over the next, 20 years, we are now back to a company of 10. In a very different formation, a lot of those part-time, a lot of them involved with the participatory side of our work, the youth theatres and the outreach drama, not a permanent active team, but and obviously a team that now matches the scope of where we go, which is now nationally touring, internationally touring, still with predominantly work for children and young people.
Well, when you had to cut down to a team of 2, obviously you had to bring everybody in then from outside.
Yeah.
Was the work still as interactive, or were you going more to script-based performance?
We did a wide range of work, probably far too much work, really, to keep hanging on in there. But an exciting development, although you'd have never chosen it to come out of the circumstances it did, was that we did work with a wide range of artists, you know, both actors, designers, writers, and still tried to create work for a wide range of audiences, you know, so we were still working with the very young end, and well, not as young as we do now, but the sort of 5 to 18s were still getting the spread of our work. But we had to fundraise, but we were careful with our fundraising, and we were trying to find collaborative partners who really shared our ethos. And within that journey, we have worked with some amazing organisations. You know, we've worked in prisons by working with Action for Prisoners Families, and a charity that we really gelled with. And we've worked with Sure Start through all the early years. Rochdale was one of the first authorities to have a Sure Start project programme. And we've worked for over 10 years now with Sure Start, creating an amazing range of work for early years. So, yes, it was just opening lots of new doors, both in style and form. And we were mixing new work, original work, with some of the best extant, because obviously M6 did have an amazing repertoire of work. So we were able, while we were reinventing ourselves, to draw on that body of work, which was great. But then we went into some new and exciting places, and I suppose because I can't remember if they changed my title. I think they did, because obviously Les used to say, when anybody asked either of us what do we do, we used to say, well, I do whatever she doesn't do, and vice versa, because that's how it was. So I think I was called Artistic Education Coordinator or something for a while, but I was able to choose the projects that we do and the people that we work with. And some of my passions, from the background of working for 10 years with predominantly children from a South Asian origin, was heritage, was just the whole celebration of diversity, really, and difference, because there seemed to be very little work at the time. It seems a long time ago, this, but, you know, being done. And so one of the things I'm most proud of is a bilingual play that we worked on, because I'd seen so many children, even in a school with 97% Asian children, at the time not being very proficient in English, still choosing to speak English because of the status, even when they were just with their friends. And that just seemed, you know, it's such an amazing thing to be bilingual, and there didn't seem to be enough pride in that or enough interest from white indigenous Rochdale children in that other language. So we decided to do a bilingual play, worked with Maggie Willett and Harmage Singh Kalarai, 2 Days of the Tiger, Dodin Kashir, which boldly and ambitiously completely integrated Punjabi, Urdu and English, and really celebrated form. We worked with Shobhana Gulati on a lot of Indian dance, and the whole experience, both in content, style and delivery, was so exciting and integrated, and such an amazing fusion of language and culture. And most of the schools we toured to, we worked with, particularly Oldham and Rochdale, on linking so that schools with very diverse, culturally diverse intakes would see the show together. So that, and just that whole, and it was shortlisted for a Writers Guild Award, and just everything from beginning to end of that project was just so stimulating. So I think it was where I really found my feet a bit in terms of, yeah, we are going to push boundaries. Not that we weren't before, but we're going to push boundaries in a whole lot of different ways. And the working with early years has allowed even more opportunities to do that. That work for under fives has taken us down avenues of non-verbal storytelling, multi-sensory installations, dance-based storytelling, you know, just a really wide range of work. And another major change that's happened is how interested theatres are in early years work. You know, I mean, that's been a phenomenon over the last 10 years, really, where theatres, a lot of theatres, were only actually produced within their programme. They were only serving children, young people at Christmas.
Yes.
And very little else, unless it was some big sort of telly blockbuster or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's changed massively over the last 10 years. So, you know, theatres do have, particularly those with studios, have strong programme, ongoing programme of work for young audiences. And the biggest audience that they're capturing, really, is families with children under sevens, really.
Yeah.
And that just coincided that M6 was working so closely with Showstart, creating all this work originally only to tour around children's centres, Showstart centres, but that is the work that's been picked up and is now touring all over certainly all over Europe for M6, because we had to, well, we always have had a focus on making all the work accessible and relevant and inspiring, but we were really focusing on those families new to theatre, first experiences of theatre, great sensitivity to that age group, and making it as imaginative as possible, but also with deep humanity. So we wanted to keep the emotional resonance. Just because the work was going to be for 3-year-olds, we didn't chuck out all that and just make it playful. You know, we kept the experience and skills that we sort of gained, and our passion in work that really moves people. So this work is becoming a very large part of our programme, really, now, the work for under sevens. But we've always maintained our contact and work for older age groups, both through our expanding youth theatre provision. A year ago we applied and were successful in getting a big lottery grant, which would take our youth theatre from the odd night per week to a big 3-year programme of a lot of outreach with very disaffected, hard to reach groups of young people, or very specific closed groups of, say, young Asian men, or different groups, and then a lot of weekly youth theatres here at M6, a lot of productions in our lovely new studio. It's not new, but I still think of it as new. There's so many years where we were in two crummy classrooms and a dirty gym.
Yes.
But the luxury in 2004 of having a purpose-built studio theatre was just wonderful, and I pinched myself for at least a year thinking, is this real or am I dreaming it? But it does, it has completely, you know, raised the profile of the youth theatre for them in themselves, you know, just that they've got such a great place to perform in and meet weekly. And other strands of our work that have developed, and which is an ongoing strand and a great way to interact with young teenagers, is our monologue strand, which I started off by a competition. I can never remember how many years ago things happened, but let's say 10 yeah. years ago. I contacted Chris Bridgman from Northwest Playwrights and said I was interested in running a monologue competition, a sort of a bit of a talking heads for teenagers sort of idea. Just short 10-minute pieces, very contemporary, very powerful, about issues that would be of interest and relevance to teenagers, well, particularly sort of 14 to 16-year-olds. But I thought if I put an ad in the stage, I'll get about 5,000 yes. scripts and never be able to read them all. So we decided that we'd just advertise it in the Northwest. So this whole little plan evolved as we went along. I got a team of actors and a director along, and we worked through these scripts without knowing who'd written them. Now, we had a very good admin system that made them anonymous, and we shared a lot of them. We shortlisted to a certain extent, and then we shared a lot of them with groups of young people, and we asked them to vote which ones they thought we should produce and why. They had to say something about why. And this was early, very early. I don't know whether X Factor was even on the box, but so it was quite, you know, it was quite a good new thing for young people to actually be choosing, and they knew M6's worked well and knew that we meant what we said. We would only produce the ones. And it turned out to be a fantastic way to consult with young people about the issues that were actually within this work. It meant that we worked with and had exposure to a much wider range of writers. And this initial project just turned out to be fantastic. When we chose the winners and tore back the names and, you know, discovered who'd written them, of the six that we'd chosen, unbeknown to us, only four writers had written them, because two of the writers we'd chosen two of their scripts and we didn't know that they were sent to in. Wasn't obvious. We had all sorts of surprises, like we were convinced that the one about a girl who was a bully had been written by a woman, but it hadn't been written by a man. And there was another one about football fanatic. And we thought that had been written by a man, stupidly. Been written by a woman. So it was fantastic. Anyway, we produced those monologues, toured them around schools, and they've turned in, and they've been produced into a book called All Talk. And we've run that competition process, and we've commissioned a lot of monologues over the years. And it does mean we can go back to working with a small class size. And yet, it's absolutely riveting stuff, because within that 10 minutes, the young people have witnessed it. They say sometimes it doesn't feel like a performance. It feels like somebody that's a friend of yours or somebody you know on the edge of your group who's got some sort of problem. Obviously, the monologues deal with somebody at a crossroads with some challenge in their life, some decision-making in their life, or at a crisis point. And the workshop that goes with that is usually fantastic and informs the work that we need to do next with young people.
Right. So it sounds from that, I said at the start, that you're not really referring to your work as TAE anymore. That could be interpreted as you're not able to do what you used to do, but you've actually diversified away from what used to be called TAE, so you're doing lots of different things, which... Mm. Is that a good thing, do you think?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think British TIE has been, over the last however many years, more than 10 years, hugely influenced by European theatre for young audiences. And their work has come from an aesthetic foundation rather than an education foundation. Not that our work didn't have aesthetic values, but I think the sort of mix and influence has actually put a lot more emphasis on the aesthetic. I think whilst also keeping children's, well, certainly for M6, keeping children's learning very much at the heart. And unfortunately, I think some TAE, in terms of the term, has become a little narrow, in that people just think TAE means you only do work about drugs and teenage pregnancy and etc. So I haven't got a problem with TIE, but I just think for the type of work we're doing, and I think a lot of companies have come to the same conclusion, to use more the phraseology that Europe uses, which is theatre for young audiences. Because if you are performing in theatres, you're not doing an interactive workshop, you know. So I mean, TIE, it feels to me, in essence, used to have all those components, you know, very comprehensive education resources and interactive workshop that, you know, explored all the moments from the play, etc. And we still do some of that, but not exclusively, so it's just broader. So the consistent within all that is that they are young audiences, so it just seems to fit better, really.
You're doing a lot of work actually in theatres. Is that that must be a major change? You're actually going out to theatres instead of going into schools or bringing people into workshops and things. That's turning you into more of a theatre company, is it?
Yes, it's just grown, and not just for M6. I think many of the companies that we, our peers really are doing the same. I mean that there is that appetite from theatres, and we're keen to broaden our range. But we're always balancing that high profile work. You know, we're at a lot of high profile now. International festivals and theatres, high profile theatres, but it's always balanced with also making sure that we're in disadvantaged communities, because, you know, that balance is important for M6, you know, that and massively important. And I hope that goes forward with whoever takes over after me. I know it will, because it's in the staff here, it's in the board, you know, that we're not just a sort of high-profile theatre. But for our actors, they have a great experience by that mix, obviously, because it was always really hard for actors to ever be seen in anything when it was only touring around the schools of the Northwest. Mm. And I think just your exposure to different audiences, you know, it's working both sides. I think it's working for the theatres to have companies with great integrity and a lot of experience going in there.
But do you think theatre for young audiences, the profile of it has risen in the profession? Because I've heard, I'm sure you have actors in the past saying, yeah, I did a bit of TIE when I was training, I've moved on from that. It's like it's a training ground rather than a valid art form in itself. Do you think that's changing?
Yes, with some people and with some agents, but not all, you know. Some people might still see it as a rung on the ladder. A lot of people who work with M6 don't see it like that, and they come back here after their acting profession now is much more varied. They can do a bit of telly and a bit of rep and a bit of work with M6, and it's all mixed. And what they usually love about M6 is that it's new and original work that they have. They're very empowered in that whole process, possibly more than they are in some places, in sort of changing, revising, you know, introducing new things. But yes, it changes you. You know, I mean, the visual aspects of our work, the music of our work, the original music, that's always been really important to us anyway. But that's possibly why theatres are interested as well, because the whole experience they get from M6, it is strong storytelling. It is, you know, character and relationship driven, and therefore quite deep. But also it looks very interesting and sounds very interesting, so they get a good experience. I don't know whether all work would translate to a theatre venue, but, you know, all work that's correct for young people, but certainly the best of that does, you know, I think. And families are really enjoying, you know, being part of that experience. We find that our work is really appreciated. A lot of families think, I've just brought my 5-year-old, I wasn't really expecting to get anything out of it apart from watch his face enjoying it. And then often write in our comments book afterwards, I didn't expect to be so moved by this. You know, I didn't expect it to touch me. I thought it was just for little so-and-so. But,
okay, well, finally then, you leave quite shortly, don't you? Later this year. What are you leaving for your successor to finish off? Where do you see M6 going in the future?
I leave at the end of July. I know the company's in good shape. That's what I'm sort of pleased about. It feels like the right time to go. We are an MPO, so that's great. So that means we've got our Arts Council funding for 3 years. Yeah. We've definitely got a very excellent reputation at the moment. We've got a fantastic core staff and board. And within the NPO, I wrote a three-year programme. So, you know, somebody can come in and gently find their way. They don't have to immediately sort of reinvent everything. Yeah. So that feels good. And I think, you know, there's a lot of change everywhere you look in the world at the moment, but I can only think that we're in a good position to sort of face those challenges, and hopefully there'll be some good opportunities within that as well. But always, I know, and I feel safe in the fact that it'll always be within M6's ethos, and that children's, young people's well-being will be at the heart of M6, because it always has been and will be into the future, I'm sure.
Okay, Dot Wood, thank you very much.